Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
For the spills, right.
And not a Betty Crocker cookbook in the whole damn house.
That's right. Hey, we've done it to another hour. Got to get out of here, guys.
Bye, right. Bye.
See ya. And here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is that any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head-on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard. Foxed Up here for a Monday night or Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon, all depending on where you might reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is. Welcome to Foxed Up. Here we go for another week. Got a bunch of stuff. Got a bit of a track, got a bit of a thing, and some other things. And, you know, I've been saying this for a while, that I reckon the U.S. media just completely has the blinders on when it comes to climate change. And I've got a bit of a piece to get into in a little bit, just about how the U.S. media is clueless when it comes to this issue of climate change, and the absolute inaction. And just looking at the discussions that have been going by in the Senate and in the Congress. They're all talking about opening up ANWR for drilling, which we, I mean, this has been debunked time and time and time and time again, that drilling in ANWR is going to make no difference to the supply problems and the price problems that we have. when it comes to oil. And, you know, it's this amazing bit of cognitive dissonance where no one in position of authority in the United States or in a position of any kind of stature in the U.S. media speaks openly about really what's going on between the speculators driving the price up, the fact that we've entered the era of peak oil, demand is completely outstripping supply, and supply can only be increased incrementally. And, you know, you're hearing all this stuff, you know, oh, we need more refinery stuff, and even though we have all this massive profits, but, you know, to help the American people, we need money, you know, we need tax dollars to help build these facilities. I mean, it's all just an absolute, just bogus, unbelievable ploy. It's just bullshit, but we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that. Got a really great little piece from Jim Kunstler from Clusterfuck Nation as well, which is a really great blog, but we'll get to that. But first, I want to do this track of the day. I've had this for a couple of months now. Now, this is an unsigned act called Mountain Mirrors, and you can find them at a couple of different places. You can find them at their main website, which is mountainmirrors.com, or you can find Jeff's page for the project at MySpace, at myspace.com/mountainmirrors. Now, I haven't really quite totally made up my mind about this album yet. And Jeff has made has said that he'd love to come to on the show at some point, and there are parts of this album that have really grabbed me, and there are parts of it that I'm not quite so sure. But it's not that I dislike it. I just haven't quite been able to make up my mind on it as of yet. And so this kind of falls into what I'd call this somewhat new subgenre out there, which is the idea of like heavy acoustic music. And so this again falls along the lines of, it doesn't sound anything like Days of the New, but similar kind of concept of hard rock and heavy music influence in songwriting and arrangement, but yet played with acoustic guitars. And this guy throws in, instead of the orchestrations, it's much more about electric pianos and organs. Now, the track that I'm going to play today, and I'll probably play another one, and I haven't forgotten about your Rush thing, Tim. We'll get there. We'll do it this week, maybe even tomorrow. But I've had this one kind of waiting on deck for a long time, and I feel a little bit slack having not gotten there. But the track that I'm going to play is called Fields of Grass. Now, there's something about this lyric to me that screams Hendrix. I'm not quite sure why. There's something just, I'm not quite sure. Sonically, it's nothing like it. But lyrically, for some reason, it reminds me of something that I would have thought Jimmy could possibly have written. So you can actually download the album at both websites, mountainmirrors.com and myspace.com/mountainmirrors. You can also check out a few of the other tracks on the player. And I don't know. I find it interesting. And a couple of months ago, when I did a show or two on why music nowadays kind of sounds a bit just kind of crap in general, and we talked about how, you know, everything's recorded so close mic'd and direct that everything's kind of in your face all the time. And how in the past, and, you know, less often as time goes by, do bands actually get into a room and play together to do an album? Well, I get the impression that this record, self-produced, you listen to the drums and you can actually hear the room. You can actually hear the room. The whole drum kit is kind of one instrument as opposed to all these individual direct sources. So it gives it a little bit more of a, I don't know, a slightly older feel to it, even though it's it's, you know, it's brand new material. So without further ado, from Mountain Mirrors, Fields of Grass. Roll it, Bob.
Down to a valley of sunshine, or won't you take me down to a field of grass? Won't you find me a way to a distant shore where I can feel your love forevermore? Where I can feel your love forevermore? By my side, you know you take me high. Won't you fly me away to a distant shore? Won't you take me back forevermore?
You know, there's this very, Bob's just said, it's got a kind of a retro feel, but it feels very real. And I think it's because they played in a room. And I love the drum sound. You know, it's not perfect and it's not grandiose, but it actually sounds like it was played in a bit of a place. And I get the impression this was not the most over-miked drum kit in the world. I think this was done on a bit of budget and done very well. They probably spent a fair amount of time with probably, you know, like four microphones or something, and had to find those sweet spots around the kit until they found something that sounded really nice. And, you know, it really does have this bit of a 70s throwback, but Tim mentioned in the chat room it's a little grungish, and I think that might have been in reference to the bass line, because it's, you know, it's got a bit of that distorted bass line, the round kind of circular thing going on. But yeah, I kind of hard to pin down, you know. But I dig that, and I've had this album in my MP3 player for a few weeks now. And, you know, I just keep listening to it over and over. My probably one biggest critique on the whole album, and it doesn't come up on that track so much, is virtually all of the vocals are double tracked on the entire album. I could have done with a little bit less of that, just because I think it gets to be a little bit sound the same all the time. But that's actually kind of nitpicking. And I noticed at his website, I think Jeff, who's the guitar player and the singer, has also got along the lines of what Trent Reznor's been doing, which is making available raw tracks for people to download and create their own remixes. So I think that, and I dig that. I dig that idea of bringing the audience in. So, you know, cool stuff. So anyway, check them out, mountainmirrors.com, and we'll see what we can do about getting Jeff on the program at some point to talk about where this all kind of came from. But, yeah, cool. Got a few thumbs up on that track. Very, very good stuff. Okay, where am I going? Where am I going? Well, I'm going to go a few places. Now, I've talked about this subject before, that the climate crisis, which is tied in with our energy problems and our water problems and everything else, that climate change could seriously spark brand new wars. Great. Just what we need. More wars. And this is why it's so important that we really tackle the problem now. Seriously take the hit in the guts now financially. Or else we're going to be spending a whole hell of a lot more money on other messes. So here from the blog at Wired.com, Gene sent this to me earlier. Nation spies, climate change could spark war. And this is not the first piece like this that I've covered over the last couple of years. Environmental groups have been warning for years that global climate change could make already tense parts of the world even worse and even spark whole new conflicts. Now the nation spies are saying pretty much the same thing. See, once again, them dirty old hippies were ahead of the curve. The U.S. intelligence community has finished up its classified assessment of how our changing weather patterns could contribute to political instability around the world, the collapse of governments, and the creation of terrorist safe havens. Inside Defense reports, Congress was briefed on the report last week. And on Wednesday, leading spies, including National Intelligence Council Chairman Dr. Thomas Fingar, an Energy Department Intelligence Chief Rolf Moet Larsen, will testify on the Hill about the 58-page document, The National Security Implications of Global Climate Change Through 2030. Now, there's a mouthful for you. In addition to examining how weather could add stress to governments with a weak grip on power, the author mulled a spectrum of second- and third-order consequences for Washington policymakers to consider, including indirect security concerns like impacts on economies, energy, social unrest, and migration. Foreign policy concerns were also weighed, including how flooding, rising water levels, or drought might create humanitarian crises. Also examined was how extreme weather events could challenge the response capabilities of governments around the world. And see, this is what I think that the United States just completely, you know, the media, just in general, keeps having a blind eye on. You know, you're so worried about how expensive the petrol is in your car. It's that short-sighted problem. But you're not seeing the long-term issues. They continue on here saying, climate change is a threat multiplier in the world's most unstable regions. A source familiar with the document tells Danger Room, it's like a match to the timber. Just think about the fights over water already underway in the Middle East and Africa, or the tensions exacerbated by the hurricanes and tsunamis in Asia. The document was originally supposed to be unclassified, but then the policy recommendations and warnings and trouble spots get more and more detailed. Richard Engel, Deputy National Intelligence Officer for Science and Technology, said in a little notice speech last month at the University of Delaware that if the findings of the assessments were made public, it would frustrate the execution of U.S. foreign policy. Did you hear that? You did hear that. You did hear that? I'll read it one more time. Richard Engel, Deputy National Intelligence Officer for Science and Technology, said in a little notice speech last month at the University of Delaware that if the findings of the assessment were made public, it would frustrate the execution of U.S. foreign policy. So in other words, U.S. foreign policy goes against the facts yet again. We wanted to get down to something that might be actionable for the policy community, Engel, a former Air Force Major General and test pilot, said, so we had to be very specific. Generally, the Earth's climate is changing. It's always been changing. So that's not anything but a blinding flash of the obvious, Engel added. We really want to understand extreme weather events because they are very important as they potentially put a risk put at risk the infrastructure. The assessment is stamped confidential, the lowest level of classification, and our source says that Fingar and Company is promising that nearly all of the document will come out in Wednesday's hearing before a joint session of the House Select Committee on Energy Independence and Global Warming and the Intelligence Community Management Subcommittee. Also testifying are former British Foreign Minister Margaret Beckett, retired Admiral Paul Gaffney, and the Army War College's Kent Hughes Butts, all of whom have previously raised alarms about climate change's strategic impact. Lee Lane with the American Enterprise Institute has been pushing the issue of geoengineering in response to global warming, and Marlo Lewis with the competitive
apparently John's ISP's gone walkabout. He'll be back as soon as he possibly can. We'll be right back.
road. Well, I got no money.
The Shuffle Kings. Nice one, Bob. Great Australian band. Great New South Wales band. I mean, this is a band that, like, plays in like, local servicemen's clubs and whatnot. They're incredible players. Where the hell was I before that all fell over? See, I to reboot the computer and all that stuff, and now all my tabs are closed. So I gotta search back wherever the hell I was. Oh my, where the hell was I? Let's see. Oh, none of that stuff. Where the hell was I? God, I hate when this happens. Okay, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Okay. I was talking about the fact that climate change is a massive security problem. But I also had another one. For those of you that haven't heard that track that was being played before, it's actually some friends of mine. They have a song list that stretches from 1901 to the present day. Just amazing. Four guys, all multi-instrumentalists. The lead guy plays double bass, mandolin, mandocello, 6 and 12 string guitars, ukulele, harmonica, and there's more. Keyboard player plays flugelhorn. There's a multi-horn player, and then there's drummer. Just a great band. Anyway, Shuffle Kings. So, let's see. Now, and I go and find the link. But anyway, that what I was in the midst of is, you know, as the effects of climate change continue to kick in, we're going to see more and more strife over the basics of life, first and foremost being water. I mean, we're already seeing battles over water. You know, Ralphs just says, 1901 to the present day. Yes. Yes, Ralphs. And I believe that they can pull any one of 3,500 songs out without having to look at a piece of music. It's one of the best cover bands I've ever worked for. Just fantastic bunch of players. yeah, they do a mean Waltzing Matilda. But they do like Neville Brothers. And they, you know, I mean, they'll do Gil Scott Heron. They'll do anything, you know. If it's a good song, they'll do it. And they do a great version of Miserloo, which I think, was that what you were playing, Bob? I can't remember. But anyway. as John continues to look through and trying to get his links back up, but that's not the one that I'm looking for. Since everything got completely thrown out of whack, gotta tell you about this one. Now, for those of you that have been listening to this program for a while, you know that I hate Monsanto. And, you know, it's a handy thing when you've helped found a network, because you can say things that other people seem to not be able to get to say, like the truth, without having it come back to, destroy their lives. This is from Alternate, sent to me by News Ninja Gene. Farm radio broadcaster gets the boot after exposing Monsanto's goon squads. You ready for this? No. Are you ready for this? If you've heard of Learfield Communications, it's probably from listening to college football and basketball games. The Jefferson City, Missouri-based Learfield is one of the nation's largest broadcasters of college sports, but it also produces news programming heard throughout the Farm Belt. Learfield was started 35 years ago by Clyde Lear and Derry Brownfield. Lear went on to be the chairman of the company he bought out his friend and partner, Brownfield, in 85. Brownfield went on to do market news reports for the Learfield News Division in 97, blah, 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 blah. Derry Brownfield would broadcast the Common Sense Coalition from the studios of Learfield Communications. Learfield would subsidize the program and allow Brownfield to use its studios and satellite hookup. Monsanto happens to be a big advertiser of the Learfield News Division to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Brownfield happens to think Monsanto is an evil corporation. Therein lies the rub. For weeks, Brownfield had been ripping Monsanto in air for its policies of enforcing its seed patents against farmers. On the April 16th show, which there's a link where you can download the program, Brownfield's topic was seed industry concentration in America. His guests were Fred Stokes, president of the Organization for Competitive Markets, and Michael Stumo, general counsel of the group. Stokes and Stumo were promoting a new project to study corporate concentration in the seed industry. Monsanto is the dominant player in the global seed industry and has a reputation for playing rough. On air, Brownfield quoted from a recently published Vanity Fair article titled Monsanto's Harvest of Fear by Donald Bartlett and James Steele. I read about a quarter of this piece on this show, right? So you've heard this piece, and from either me or some other link, you probably read this piece. Where is it? Sorry, just lost my spot. On air, Brownfield quoted from this article, Monsanto relies on a shadowy army of private investigators and agents in the American heartland to strike fear into farm country. Bartlett and Steele write, they fan out in the fields and farm towns, where they secretly videotape and photograph farmers, store owners, and co-ops, infiltrate community meetings, and gather information from informants about farming activities. Farmers say that some Monsanto agents pretend to be surveyors. Others confront farmers on the land and try to pressure them to sign papers giving Monsanto access to their private records. Farmers call them the seed police and use the words such as Gestapo and Mafia to describe their tactics. After reading from the Vanity Fair article, Brownfield then begins to riff on the Mafia theme. Multinational corporations are doing everything possible to change agriculture, and not for the better, Brownfield said on the show. I know a little bit about this. Not a lot, just a little bit. But Monsanto, literally, they have Mafia goons out, do they not? They show up on farmers' property. They try to harass them. They say, if you don't sign this, we're going to take you to court. They have literally tried to destroy agriculture as we know it. They have a goon squad. Maybe that's not what they like to be called, but it is what the. But if it was the Mafia, we would call them the goon squad. Calling Monsanto's patent enforcers goons is apparently the straw that broke the camel's back. Brownfield's stint at Learfield was about to end. Last week, Brownfield was told that he could no longer broadcast out of the Learfield studios. His buddy Clyde Lear posted a blog on the Learfield website saying that Brownfield's last show will be in mid-May. The Common Sense Coalition grinds to a halt on our system, Lear wrote. Most of his listeners loved him, as did his affiliates. Lear wrote about his buddy. He didn't mind controversy or taking on giants like Monsanto Corporation. He thought they were bad for farmers, too big for their britches, and generally bad for America. Increasingly, he's been saying so without seeking balance, in my opinion. And then later, in a response to listeners who were upset that Brownfield was being let go, Lear wrote, some seem to think the reason Dairy is leaving is because Monsanto threatened to stop advertising if we didn't put a gag on him. If that were the only reason Dairy was asked to leave, then I can see why they think we are selling out. We've parted ways because accusations being made about not only advertisers, but individuals, corporations, government, fill in the blank, were based on fear and lies with absolutely no truth to back them up. I abhor radio talk shows like Rush Limbaugh and Dairy Brownfield where half-truths are articulated. It won't be part of them, and that's my right. Well, you know what, mate? Just go screw yourself, because he was speaking the truth. And that's just a bunch of spin bullshit that you're giving, saying, oh, it wasn't because he said something bad about the Mafia company. But in an interview with Corporate Crime Reporter, Lear admits that the Monsanto issue is what drove his buddy Brownfield out. If the Monsanto issue had not come up, we would not be here today, Lear said. Lear said that the president of Learfield Communications, Roger Gardner, talked recently with John Raines, Monsanto's director of public affairs. John Raines talked to Roger Gardner about the difficulties they felt Brownfield is giving them, Lear said. Gardner told me he talked to John Raines about the Vanity Fair article. The pressure I got came from the president of the news division, Stan Kongsfield, Lear said. Stan is the guy that has responsibility for selling and maintaining the financial viability of our news division. Stan is a no-nonsense guy, so Stan comes in and says, why are we doing this? Why do we continue to do this? We give him all these things, and he spits in our face by lambasting our good advertisers without giving them an opportunity for fair and balanced reporting. Oh, my God. Are you catching how much spin there is in this bullshit? You know, it sounds like his idea of fair would have been just kissing ass up to Monsanto. I reckon this guy's just a legend already. Seems to me he was a fairly popular host for people in the farm belt of the United States. And supposedly Lear also confronted the host, saying, I went to him and said, lay off this, Lear said. Lay off the Monsanto thing. I'm getting a lot of complaints. Ah, doesn't that suck? Doesn't that suck when the truth gets in the way of business? Good on him. Good on him. Because I just think that Monsanto is about as bad as it gets. Unbelievable. A little further down the article, Lear recalls, Monsanto is an evil empire, he said. This is evil, he said. Every farmer hates Monsanto. You know what they have done? And then he would lambast Monsanto and lay out this litany of stuff that they do. It included milk. Apparently there's a human growth hormone that they put in the milk. This guy is saying, human growth hormone? Human growth hormone? No. It's a bovine growth hormone. You know, it's making me think of, I believe it's the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy lyric. You know, making reference to the next time you hear a man ranting, put everything in context. And I think you do. So when someone who knows a little bit and obviously has exposure to farmers, probably, you know, had a bit of a talk show going on. I haven't had a chance to listen to the gentleman's program. I've downloaded the show in question, which I look forward to listening to. But I get the impression that, you know, he came to these opinions about Monsanto, not by, you know, just passively just deciding that he was going to hate Monsanto. I get the impression that he did the research probably based on the tales that his own listeners were telling him. So, you know, did Monsanto ask to come on the program and actually discuss the issues? No. They just called the station and said, we're going to pull our monies. We're going to pull our monies because we've been paying for all this time to make sure that you don't let the farmers talk about the stuff that we get up to and the things that we do. Because they are goons. I mean, there's just no other way to label people who will go and infiltrate community organizations, spy on farmers and co-op owners and little corner stores. And pull the I'm big corporate behemoth, beware me, do as I say or you're dead. I don't mean dead as in murdered, but dead as in career, financial. Ah! Seems to me that Bob Kincaid knows exactly who this gentleman was. 75 years old. Been broadcasting since Bob was a baby. Hey, Bob, join me here for a second. What can you tell me about this guy? I've never heard of him before, but it seems like you have.
Well, I'm a sports junkie, John, so I'm more familiar with him in the context of sports broadcasting. But when I went to college in Missouri, we were about 25 miles from Jefferson City, which is their home base, and you know, you could hear these guys. And, you know, nothing blazing, no flamethrowers or anything like that. This guy's process was evolutionary. You're right. You know, he didn't just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to hate Monsanto. Monsanto is based in St. Louis, though. And so just like the ripple from the pond is thickest where the rock goes in, Jefferson City's not that far from St. Louis. So,
right.
Yeah.
I think that this is probably one of the best examples.
I mean, this stuff was, and hog belly prices have dropped 2 cents on the, you know,
right.
on June delivery. It looks like it's going to be a good dry and weather condition day today. So, your ground should dry out nicely and you should be able to disc it tomorrow morning. Yeah.
It was farmers and farmers' issues. So, you know, obviously over time, as Monsanto has developed into the monster that you and I understand it's developed into, he began to develop the opinion. And, you know, I find it amazing, and the guy who runs the station coming back and saying, oh, you know, he wasn't talking about both sides of the issue. What both sides?
No. That's the myth that's been created, John. Dadgummit. That there's, you know, you've got abject evil on one side and then the straight skinny on the other, and that somehow you're supposed to put lipstick on the pig and pretty up the evil so that you can have balance. That's what the Bernie Goldbergs and the damn Foxes have done to this world. There is some stuff that doesn't, you know, was there a good side to Adolf Hitler? Was there a good side to Pol Pot? Was there a good side to Joseph Stalin? And there's no good side to Monsanto. There's no good side to a damn potato that's got a gene from a goat's belly in it.
I mean, you know, because, you know, in the United States, they passed laws that actually say you're not allowed to label stuff as being genetically modified, right? And so it's just continuing this idea of just keep them stupid, and they'll just keep going on. You know,
well, this is just...
Do you really think that people... If they really got a grasp on a potato with the gut gene of a four-legged creature inserted into it, doesn't cause some sort of, you know, alarm?
Well, it has to. I mean, you know, you go and you dig up your potatoes and you're pulling out potatoes with babies' arms growing out of them, for God's sakes. I mean, that's where we're headed. The law of unintended consequences is going to square and cube itself on all of this research. And, you know, I'm a science guy. I believe in examining this sort of stuff. But there's an island of Dr. Moreau side of it, too, that it's intolerable. And the fact that a dairy isn't allowed to print free of bovine growth hormone on a carton, you know, we put missing children on milk cartons.
Yeah, but it's the same thing, you know. You have this thing that, you know, in the States where they irradiate food and call it pasteurization.
Well, yeah. This is a three-hour show. But see, dairy. I get the idea that Dairyfield didn't just come to this out of one article in Vanity Fair. The research has been out there. You know, this stuff goes to like Roundup Ready corn is one of them. And it's that hateful number 2 field grade corn that Michael Pollan's been screaming about for 5 years.
Right.
You know, all the cornfields that got inundated, from the Midwestern flooding, a great portion of that cannot help but be number 2 field grade corn. And then, well, food prices are going to rise. Well, only because the price of high fructose corn sweetener's going to rise. Because you can't eat that crap. I mean, you can't wrap it in foil with a pat of butter and put it on the grill and eat it. You can't boil it with molasses in the water to make it soft and sweet. You can't roast it. You can't toast it. You can't pop it. You can't grind it into meal. You can't pull the grits out of it. You can't eat it. And when they feed it to the daggum cattle, the cattle get so sick from eating it that they have to be pumped chock full of antibiotics and hormones to be able to tolerate it.
It's incredible how we seem to have this penchant for having to find a way to just hijack nature when nature seems to be able to do the job fine all by itself. But for some reason, nothing has value unless some major corporation isn't making some stupid, stinking profit off of something that they don't deserve.
Right? And the operative word, John, is stupid. This, you know, there's... thank God that Norwegian seed bank is up there, because, you know, one of these days, we're going to need it. I mean, this Frankencorn is already showing up in literally the cradle of the maize plant itself in the highlands of Mexico.
Well, I mean, that was the beauty of that particular Vanity Fair article. I mean, aside from the fact that it was almost a novel in magazine form, is it walked straight through everything that you've just talked about, the cross-pollinization in Mexico where GM corn is illegal, but it's just purely because of stuff that due to NAFTA is allowed to be imported as foodstuffs, and a couple of kernels get dropped.
And people don't understand how far it extends, John, either, because it extends to things like rapeseed. You know, we've talked about in the past that, you know, you go to the store and, oh, I'm going to get me a jug of canola oil. There's no such thing as a canola.
It's rapeseed. Canola is the trademark.
Canola is the consortium that controls it, the Canadian oil, whatever. It's a Canadian consortium.
Right.
And they march right into a farmer's fields, and Canadian farmers have been ruined by the genetic presence of one of these modified rapeseeds in fields of stuff that they didn't plant the company's seeds. It was just a matter of plants doing what plants do, with pollen blowing through the air, or maybe a seed eaten by a bird that turns into poop in another field. That's how plants travel. They don't have legs. They entice the animal kingdom.
It's an amazing scam that they've come up with, isn't it? You know, we'll create this stuff.
How in God? I mean,
by nature.
You know, and then there's this old joke about what do you call a lawyer with an IQ of 42? Your Honor. And they've gone into courts and they've convinced these judges that they have a right to patent something that has been a process that has been a function of 10,000 years of selective crossbreeding through the generations, whether it's a bean or a corn or a seed. And it's nuts. My favorite kind of bean out of Mexico, some asshole in Colorado patented it because he said he came up with a new leaf shape. And it's only been cultivated by the Mexica, the Mixteca, the Texcalteca, all the central Mexican farms. It's only been cultivated for 3,000 years.
Well, yeah, Gail sent me a piece which I have to chase back and cover this week, about this massive rush to, you know, get these patents on this genetic material. And many of them are actually things that they haven't created. It's just a matter of we were the first to identify it.
Yeah, well, if you had had this, look at it this way, and we're out of time, John, but if Linnaeus had this in, what, the 18th century? The Linnaeus Corporation would control planet Earth. Because what if Aristotle, the first cataloger of life,